Hey, welcome to the Listen Bitch podcast, your go-to destination for unlocking your full potential and embracing the extraordinary possibilities within you. Thank you for joining me today on a journey of self-discovery and empowerment as we explore the transformative power of stepping into greatness. I want you to come into alignment with the God-given gifts, unleash your soul, and learn to co-create a life you love. As you become a writer of your destiny, in this podcast, you're going to find the inspiration, the practical tips, and that sometimes abrasive nudge to take the leap of faith towards your dreams. You are in the right place. Buckle up so we can unleash your inner badass. What's up, you guys? Brandon Lynette here today. I have a special guest, but before I introduce her, I just want to say that opportunity, if you're intentional about your intentions, stuff just falls at your feet. And I'm going to say this because I literally was just live, and you guys could backdate this. What is the date today? It's April 4th. Okay. I just went live on my Facebook page and I'm talking to you guys because I have this current constant conversation happening in my containers of we're blaming our parents. We're blaming how we were raised. We're blaming everything around us rather than taking massive responsibility for where we are. We're giving away our power. And I talked about just kind of my struggle when I was in and out of juvie, how people planted seeds in me that inspired me to just keep going. You know, adults saw something in me that I couldn't quite see in myself that the people close to me definitely didn't let me see. It was a place where I had the first seed planted for a level of growth. And I really do have this passion in me to want to reach out to teen girls because I know how fucking hard it is to be a teenager in a normal life. Okay. In a normal mom and dad at home, they have a great marriage. You're just winging it out here as a teen. So I'm talking about even more so the people that don't have the parents that they're, you know, kids are going through a lot. Kids are going through a lot. So I just think it's really great because I'm bringing on Sherry Gazit today, and she works with teens, with TeenWise. And I'm excited for this conversation because we've been a teen or we have a teen, and we know that there's going to be a lot of things we can relate to. And maybe this is something that can help you in your parenting journey, that can help you kind of heal your inner teen. And even something I feel like, you know, Sherry works with the mean girl stuff here. And I feel like a lot of teen girls turned into grown-ass women who are still bringing out that mean girl facade. So, like I said, you guys, I'm taking that intention, I poured it out, and now I get to have a great conversation about something that I'm literally opening up as close to my heart right now. So Sherry Gazit, welcome to Listen Bitch Podcast. I'm excited for you to be here. So give us a little background about who you are, where you come from, and what you do.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate this opportunity. And I really love one thing you said in there, the mean girl facade. That facade is the key word there, but we'll get into some of that later.
Yep.
So I have this company called TeenWise that came from a moment of despair. I had a position, I was working with the Women's Sports Foundation and our grant ran out. And I was crying, what am I gonna do? And this is what happens. So we, as you're saying, we take things and we take seeds from those and it grows. I could have just said, oh, that's it. I'm done. I can't help girls anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But like, this is what I was meant to be doing. And I was a teen, as you mentioned, we were either a teen or, you know, have a teen or we were a teen. And I remember those days that were so difficult. And I just felt like, who am I in this world? And so in doing the work that I do, working with girls who are dealing with girl drama and friendship issues, I really am able to heal myself, first of all, but also to empower these girls so that not just now, but for the rest of their life, they have skills that they don't have to put on that mean girl facade. They can actually step into their own power, realize that they can bring kindness to the world, but still set their boundaries and have healthy relationships and friendships. And I want them to see that greatness about themselves.
Yes.
So to inspire them to move on like somebody did for you.
Exactly. And it's a planted seed. Is there any expectation when you're working with teens that you, do you have this false sense of hope that you're going to see immediate stuff come through them?
Yeah. Do I have that or do they have that?
I feel like you, because I know what that seed planted was, and I rebelled against it anyway. Okay. Yeah. I was like, yeah, you're stupid. I belong here because I'm a badass and I have an attitude and a chip on my shoulder, and you know, you don't know anything.
Yeah. I mean, I go in obviously with hope that, you know, I'm going to see a change, but I know it's not overnight. You know, one of the things that really is core to these issues is that the girls I'm seeing accept themselves and actually see themselves in this wonderful light versus their weaknesses and everything that's wrong with them. And, you know, it doesn't mean there's not room for growth, but they need to love who they are right now today in order for other people to be attracted to them and to become their friend.
Okay. I love that. And do you also see the side of, you know, I think that especially a teen that is empowered and is confident, there's going to be a level of mean girl still coming at them because of jealousy.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, it's not about what I'm working with the girls on and the parents and supporting them. It's not about controlling anyone.
Yeah.
It's about how do you deal with that behavior that's coming at you that's not so nice. And also understanding why that girl might be mean, right? What is it that is causing them to treat you like that? And when you can understand where people are coming from, it doesn't hit you in the same way. It's more like, okay, I'm good. I'm fine over here. I kind of feel bad for her that she's going through all of that stuff. So it's a releasement of judgment of self, but also others, understanding what you can and can't control, but being able to step into the power of your own choices.
I love that. What was that situation? What catapulted you into wanting to do this? Like your personal experience of being a teen? How'd you get started on this journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was probably fourth grade when they start asking you, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I remember it was computer scientist or a therapist were two of the things that came up for me. So it kind of came back around right to that. I actually did computer science for a bit in college, but then is like, this is not where I'm meant to be. So I went to psychology. But I remember I always wanted to help people in some way. I used to live, we lived on this big piece of property, but kind of near the front was this assisted living home, or it's probably beyond that. It was people who were actually hospitalized already. It wasn't quite hospice, but probably close. And I remember always wanting to write notes and things to help them over there, right?
Right.
And then when I got to college and was doing my degrees, everything I did was geared towards the pediatric population. And part of that was knowing what I went through. I had young parents. They had three of us by the time they were 23.
Oh, wow.
So they went through a lot. My mom attempted suicide. So I went through that as well, which gave me the gift of really appreciating life and every single day. And grew up in a really small, poor town. So that was kind of where I was. Not a lot of activities, not a lot of support. And I remember thinking how lonely it felt at times as a teen with all the girl drama swirling around, not really knowing how to deal with it. And that stuck with me. So as I started getting, you know, my degrees and such, I was like, yeah, that's what I want to work on is for the teen girls, because I really want them to be empowered. But it's like empowering myself, right? Looking back at my journey and being like, that's what I needed back then. And that's what I'm going to give these girls.
Do you have some core memory bullies in your life?
I wouldn't say bullies necessarily. I was actually considered popular. And I know there's always this idea, oh, they're popular, they have everything great. Mm-hmm. But what it meant was I was a target constantly. So I would come back to school on Monday and I would hear about all these things I did on the weekend. I'm like, actually, I did nothing. I was at home all weekend, you know?
Yeah.
Or they would talk about small things like I had fake nails, which I didn't, or I was on birth control, which I wasn't. Mm-hmm. Not that those matter, but right. It's like,
as a kid, it's heavy.
Yeah, exactly. It's heavy. Are they talking about me? What is this?
Yeah. I definitely had bullies and I will never forget. I will never forget them. Two of them on the bus. And I'm just like, still maybe have a bad taste in my mouth. How did these mean girls turn out? I wonder if someone's bullying their kids and how they deal with that.
Yeah, I know. That's interesting. I mean, I know that there's people that were bullies and then they come out of that. They realize their mistakes. And it's hard to go back unless you're still in the same town or something to go back and correct those mistakes.
Right.
Those bullies just have to recognize where they went wrong and better themselves, right? Because bullies actually need the same thing that the targets of bullying need. They need love and kindness, and they need a better way to interact with people.
Right. I'm with you on that. What are some of the common challenges in the girls that you're working with? What's the common theme you see with them?
I see, unfortunately, a lot of girls who were part of a friend group and something happened and all of a sudden everybody has excluded them, which means they're sitting alone at the lunch table. They don't have any weekend plans. In their classes, there's no one to talk to. It's an exclusion that you can't avoid because you're going to school with these people. Right. So that then becomes a lack of motivation to go to school. Or when they're in school, they have a hard time learning because they're so anxious about everything going on. So there's that exclusion. But there's also girls I work with that are having difficulties keeping friendships, or they have no friendships. So they kind of, there's a pattern. They have friends and they get ousted. They have friends, they get ousted. So we kind of go back and look at that. We analyze, is there anything that you can do differently? Again, empowering. It's not about blaming. It's about, let's see what you have control over and let's change that a bit.
I like that. And then what is that? What's the technique that you use when you're trying to inspire like that confidence in them to get them just to recognize themselves with their, you know, self-esteem is an issue in teenagers. So how do you work through that?
Yeah, in self-esteem, we had this big movement in like the 70s where we felt like as a society, all we had to do was just tell them, you're good, you're great. And that was what they needed. But they need so much more. They have to believe it and they have to internalize it. So in sessions, it's not like, you're so wonderful and amazing. I have to work so that they can see and they can pull out what's great about them. So oftentimes in the early sessions, I'll say, give me three things that are great about you. And it takes these girls a very long time to come up with three things. And I work on inner critic, inner cheerleader. So we can't get rid of our inner critic. We have to just make it a little quieter and bring out the inner cheerleader. And then we work on also, how do we deal with rejection? How do we allow it to affect us? How do we deal with mean comments that are made? And so that we're creating not an armor, but we're creating a way to move about the world that you don't feel so weak, that everything that said you internalize and then you take it to mean I'm not a likable person, I'm not good enough. That's what we work on. And it's, I work with most girls a minimum of 3 months, and then we take it from there. But we make a lot of headway in that time. But it is just, they've got to see their worth is really what it is. But I can't just tell them, they've got to find it.
I guarantee it does help that you see that in them though. And even just to tell them that, even if they can't see it for themselves in that moment, because I don't think they're always getting that at home either. So if we've got, you know, I do have a lot of moms that listen and moms of teens. What would be your advice to them to help their girls navigate through the mean girl era?
Yeah, one of the things is to not try to fix it. What happens when our girls come and tell us what's going on is our mama bear mode comes in and we want to fix it. And when we do that, we start talking about how bad the other girls are, or these friends don't matter. They're not good friends anyway. So I would say, don't minimize what they're going through. And don't dramatize it. Don't kick up the mama drama. You don't need to get in there with them. You need to be that really calm emotional rock as they're going through all of this stuff. And so as a parent, yes, you're right that we can help to build them up, But there's an interesting thing that happens when they're teens. They don't believe our praise anymore unless it's very specific. Mm-hmm. We can't just say you're great, you're good, because they're like, mm-hmm. well, you're my mom or dad. You got to say that.
You have to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But be specific about things. Like, I love the way that you do your homework, or I love that you give me hugs, or that you mm-hmm. wake up on time in the morning. Think about mm-hmm. what specifically they're doing that you can praise them for.
I love that. You just said that parents need to be an emotional rock. I am curious how you navigated that with a young mom, because I don't think there's any way that an 18 to 20 year old could be an emotional rock at that point for their kids. So how did you get through that process, not having that with your parents?
Yeah. You know, and it's a different day and age, right? Back then, parents didn't deal a lot with emotions, and there was a lot going on, obviously. So I am an introvert to the core, and I do a lot of internalizing and thinking about things. So I think that I just thought about things. And from a young age, I remember kind of thinking a little more existentially than most people mm-hmm. probably did. And I did a lot of art. I come from an art family anyway, but just that drawing process, when you're getting into, you know, calming your brain, it gets you that calm feeling to kind of think about what's going on. And the other thing that I started doing in, I think it was seventh grade, I started playing clarinet, and that was an emotional outlet for me. As I was playing things, it was like going into a different world and just calming everything down.
So that would be my advice to listeners. If you have a teen daughter and you guys are butting heads about things, I would encourage you to encourage her to find a hobby, just like I encourage you to do, to get outside of your current problem. If you can find something outside of yourself to focus on, it changes the perspective of what's in our face in this moment. What is your most memorable moment from your work with teenage girls that illustrates that impact of empowerment?
Oh, as you ask that, I've got all these faces like popping up in my head, like, oh my gosh, which one? And I'm going to kind of give you a general moment that I see with my clients. So okay. The first time when they come in, they're a little hesitant to come in, right? Mm-hmm. And whether it's on Zoom or it's in person, and their shoulders are slumped, they kind of look defeated, and there's a sparkle that's missing. They're just feeling like they're hopeless, they're helpless, life's just happening to them. Mm-hmm. And so when I see that, I'm not joyous that I see that, but I'm like, this person is going to change, and mm-hmm. I'm excited that they're in front of me and willing to get support. You know, fast forward to maybe a month or so, when I see them come in, their shoulders are back, they've got a smile on their face, and there's just a sparkle that comes back when they're telling me about how they handled things. So it's not that girl drama is gone, and that's right. not the point of working with me. It's that something happened and they rose above the girl drama, like the drama's going on down at the bottom of the mountain. They're at the top looking down, able to look at it in a rational way and to figure out what their choices are. So when one girl specifically, there was tons of girl drama going on, and she came in, sat down, and she was like, I got a really mean text today. She didn't say it in a defeated way. She had a smile on her face. And I was like, oh, okay, so how did you handle it? She's like, I just deleted it. I didn't do anything. Nice. And she felt so much more in control and didn't allow that text to send her into a spiral of anxiety, or to, you know, start talking negatively about herself. She didn't allow it to ruin her day. She actually had a smile on her face. So it's those moments where I'm like, she's got it. She knows exactly what she needs to do.
That's really awesome. I have two questions, and I swear if I don't write stuff down, I forget. So I'm trying to write as fast as I can in chicken scratch so I don't mess this up. But social media, because I think that the biggest bullies come out on the internet. So how do you help your girls navigate through social media?
Well, social media, as you said, it brings out the bullying, it brings out the mean, because nobody's looking at what the emotional impact is of what they're writing. And so some of the most meek girls who would never say anything mean to a person's face will be on social media and say mean things. It's something that we're stuck with. It's not something that's going away. So we have to teach our girls how to protect themselves. And this is not just girls. This is us too, right? You're a business owner and you know the more visible you get, the more mean it can be. So it's all about understanding that you can either choose to give people the power over you, or you can choose to not let them have the power over you. So if you choose to get on Instagram and there's going to be people on there saying mean things, you've got a choice. Do you stay friends with them? Do you block them? Do you confront them? Do you get off of social media? It's not just a, oh, woe is me, this is happening to me. There's choices within that.
How do you approach topics like, body image issues, especially because social media has painted a picture of, I mean, Hollywood did it to us, and now I feel like Instagram now is doing it to our kids. Just the idea of perfect, and it's not attainable because it's all filtered. But how do you navigate that with their body image and stuff through that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother area of expertise, right? So it definitely comes up in my practice and in our sessions, but it's not something I focus on a ton. So I'm not the expert here. But what I will say if it comes up is I talk about that idea of perfection. And what does that even mean? They can't explain what perfection is, right? They can't explain what they feel like they need to look like to be good enough. And once they realize that, it's like, oh yeah, it's not attainable. Whatever this thing is, I can't even describe, that is not attainable. And also awareness that things are photoshopped and everybody is different. So we talk about just that, again, the inner cheerleader and the inner critic. What is that inner critic saying? And looking at what is fueling that inner critic. And that for many girls is the social media.
What has been something like, how much have you been able to grow and reflect on healing your inner child as you're working with these girls?
Yeah, I think in terms of what I could have done differently in my teen years, and that helps. I can't go back and relive those teen years, nor would I want to. But knowing that what I went through is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And so I didn't have a horrible teenage life. It was difficult, as most teenage lives are, but it made me who I am. And I think there's some forgiveness in there that has helped me forgive the younger me that wasn't able to handle everything well, that did let people's rumors or gossip get to me at sometimes. So it has helped in that I can release that. I think like we all are born with kind of an empty backpack, some generational trauma in there, but as we go, we fill it up. We just throw things in there. And it's kind of like at the end of the school year, if you have kids and you help them to empty out that nasty backpack, there is so much stuff in there. But you can't see it unless you bring it around, put it in front of you, and actually open it up and look at what's in there.
Oh, I
Some of
learned
it.
from that. It goes straight in the dumpster,
Oh,
though.
yeah.
Like it just goes in the dumpster.
Exactly. There's some nasty stuff in there, right? So, we got to go through it, sort through it. And that's the teenage years. We've got to sort through, especially when we begin parenting teens, we've got to look through all of that and toss out process because it impacts how we support our kids when they're dealing with friendship issues. If you're bullied, if somebody's mean to your girl, you're going to automatically think, oh, they're bullying her, versus, oh, they kind of were mean to her today. There's a different level that you bring in. So we gotta think of what's in our backpack and deal with that.
Who are your role models when you're bringing in this motivational approach to resonate with your teens?
Oh, what a question. There's so many people. It's hard to say like one or two people because I really learn from anybody who comes into my life, whether they're a celebrity or if they're the person who's checking me out at the grocery store. I think every person is impactful. Now, as a role model, I don't know if I have an answer to that because I just think that there's so many people that have impacted how I work with girls and that motivate me to move forward, continue what I'm doing. I don't have an answer for that one.
What are when how do I form this question? What ways do you see your work contributing to that future success of these teens?
So I'm working with individuals, obviously, but I see them as part of community. And there's a girl, for instance, I've been working with that there's a lot of girl drama swirling. She's a role model now for her group of friends of how to step back and think about things logically, to not stir the pot, to be kind amidst all of the drama. And so I imagine her when she's in her 20s, in her 30s, in her 40s, how she's gonna be interacting in the world with every single person that she interacts with. It's gonna be in a different way than if she hadn't been working with me. And that's for all the girls that I'm working with. And it's not that I am so wonderful and amazing, it's that they've taken the opportunity to work on themselves. And so they will impact people all around them. They're going to impact if they have children, how they are raising them. It's really cool to think about the impact isn't just in that moment in our session together. It's going to really, impact many other people.
That's amazing. I mean, either way, you're planting seeds and you're catching this so that they don't have healing to do after they have kids, right? That was my process of like I never got through that phase, and then I had babies, and unfortunately, my oldest grew with me. I didn't grow for her to be able to protect her. There was a lot of shit that she went through with me, and I was 22 when I had her, but that's a baby. Like that's a I was a baby. I had no business having babies at 22.
Yeah, 22. I think if my parents had
business.
three by 23, yeah. I mean, it's even the girls who work with me, they're still gonna have healing to do. We all have healing to do, some more than others, but it's something that you can bring your kids along with, to be open with them about it. They don't need to relive your trauma with you, but to be able to show your kids how you're working through things, how powerful is that? Talk about role models, right? Like moms are role models to their daughters and, to their kids, no matter what their gender. And so when we just outwardly say, I'm really struggling with this, I'm gonna go journal. Go for a run. I'm going to go see a therapist. You are showing them the way.
Yeah, no, they've definitely seen the change, and I pride myself on setting them up for what's possible. But my kids are my biggest haters. I mean, mom said it, so who cares? Like, it's they have to hear from someone else. And I feel like it's the same thing with my little babies on this podcast, is that I'm mom at this point, and everything I say kind of they're just like, oh, that's mom saying it. We don't care. So I'm happy to bring on guests and to meet people like you, Sherry, who are making an impact in the world. What would you say? Because this mean girl facade, some people don't grow out of it. They didn't have a Sherry in their life to plant a seed to help them, just start to cultivate that emotional maturity and intelligence, right? Like where we have that empathy, we can see other people. I'm at the point in my life where if someone's hurting me, I'm not taking it personal. I'm like, dude, you're going through some shit. Sorry for you. Like, that's your problem. So what would you say, because to these teen girls that are essentially in the bodies of 30 and 40-year-old women now, and they're just stuck in that teen mode of just nastiness, what do you say to them, and what do you say to the people dealing with them?
It goes back to looking in your backpack. You got to process your stuff because if you're going out in the world and you're being mean to everybody else, is that really making your life better? It's not. Like, you're not living the life that you deserve and probably that you want. And so think about that. Why are you being mean? And a lot of it goes back to, we as women are not really taught how to have conflicts. Mm-hmm. And so there's people who went through a lot, and so they're like, I'm not putting up with anything anymore. So they become mean. And mm-hmm. it could have started when they were a teen, or maybe it was a growth, what they felt like was growth. So now they're mean to protect themselves. But you can absolutely set boundaries and be firm, not be walked all over, in a kind and compassionate way, which at the end of the day is going to feel better for you.
So right? Sherry, you're telling me to stop telling people to fuck off. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do
that. There's a time and place for everything, right?
I don't do that. And I just love what you're doing. I love what you're doing because I think that is the perfect place to start. Because there is no peace and joy and fulfillment without that emotional maturity, without that self-awareness, without... My passion is to get people to embrace their purpose and to step into that, to who they can be, not stay stuck at who they think they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think teens just navigating, like, they have no clue. And then, you know, there's this unrealistic pressure of, well, by the time you turn 18, you need to have your whole life figured out. You need to know where you're going to school, what you're going to school for. I homeschool. I'm very anti my kids. My two oldest are in college right now and they're doing amazing. And, you know, part of my deal with them was, you don't have to go. Mm-hmm. They got scholarships. I'm like, go have the experience, go be a kid. But if they were footing the bill for this entire thing, it would be a whole different conversation, because how do you know at 18 what you want to do?
Yeah.
I'm in my 40s and I change professions all the time.
Yeah, that's important that these kids know that, because they are taught, it's like at 10 years old, you're supposed to know what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And so I talk a lot about, especially when they're about to hit college, that mm-hmm. this is not your last choice forever in your life. This is a choice. Right. And like with you, when my kids were looking at college, my youngest is still in college. But basically, when the language started coming up, I have to go to college, I was like, oh, no,
ouch.
Let's back up on that one. Yeah. You don't have to go. And in fact, if I hear you say that again, we're going to change course on this.
No way. I feel like when kids graduate, they should go work in customer service, like a restaurant, go wash dishes, go cook, go serve. Because you get a whole, that's where I learned all my life lessons, because I bartended for 20 years. I saw people. When you're in the service industry, you get, you start seeing that awareness of like, okay, this isn't all about me. These people really, this person is struggling with something. And you just learn hard work.
Yeah.
You learn people. Well,
yeah. In that industry, you had to set boundaries a lot, didn't you?
Exactly. Exactly. It just mm-hmm. sets you up. I think, working through fast food and then go do some laborious work and then, go volunteer at a soup kitchen, a homeless shelter, go volunteer at an animal shelter. I think there's so many experiences that people need to put themselves through so that we can open up that compartment for compassion. A lot of, we're just like in that selfish zone, but then we're letting the whole world make us feel like we're under attack, and it's exhausting.
Well, there's something else that happens when you do that kind of work and you get out there mm-hmm. is that you don't have so much pressure on yourself, because mm-hmm. right now teens are feeling the pressure to fulfill all of these achievements and all of these mm-hmm. goals. And it's so focused on them. So, it's like, if I mess up this thing, the world's going to end. And it's not that they're egotistical. It's that that's kind of what we're teaching them these
exactly.
days.
Exactly.
So we need to rethink that, add the volunteering mm-hmm. in, add in thinking of things other than themselves. Mm-hmm. Even when a child kind of gets into the therapy funnel, which is, I'm all for therapy, don't get me wrong. But it becomes all about that.
Yeah.
And so one thing that I recommend for parents, if their kids are struggling with anxiety or depression or girl drama, is that all of your conversations are not about that. Start talking right. about other stuff.
Exactly. Because that's what you focus on, you bring upon. So the more power you're giving this, the more life you're giving that. I feel like it's, we learn that in every area of our life. And that includes having the conversation with our kids. I know I work with a lot of business women that, you know, we intentionally cultivate our intention and our mindset and what our perspective is. But at home as a mom, we're not necessarily, I catch myself with my kids falling into that little, you know, therapy funnel, we could call it the therapy funnel of just, I'm like, whoa, Brandon, just stop talking about that, you know, and just trying to teach the older kids when it comes to the, I have six altogether. So full hands over here. but I, you know, I'll see them start to focus on something with the kids and I'm like, just ignore it. Like if we bring light to it, it's going to be a thing. If we just ignore it, it fades out. And it's harder for the, you know, my college girls to be able to see that from the same perspective I have. They just, it doesn't make sense. They're like, just nip it in the bud. And I'm like, no, just trust me, ignore it. It happens. It happens. Right. If you had millions of dollars, all the money in the world, what would you be doing with your time?
Well, I would be doing exactly what I'm doing. I absolutely love what I do. I would just expand. I would be able to do more things in different places because I would fly wherever I wanted to. Yeah, I love what I do. And so if I had millions and millions, I would probably build a facility. I would probably be training a lot more coaches, setting up a whole, you know, bringing on a whole new team. I just would reach more girls. I would not stop what I'm doing. I might add a few more vacations in there, but that's, I mean, I help my kids out who are in their 20s, you know, maybe buy them a house, but I would still be doing what I'm doing.
That's amazing. What would be the last piece of advice that you have for, you know, the moms with teens that are listening, the caregivers, the teachers, the, you know, I've got a, I know I have a principal on here that listens. What would be your advice to them in their approach to these girls, just everyday interactions, knowing that they're probably going through shit?
Yeah, I think one thing that if we step away from it, reduces our anxiety and it will help our kids. And that is, we do not have to fix it for them. Half the time when they come to us, they just want support. They want someone to listen to them and they want someone to validate how they're feeling. And if we do that, that's half the battle. If we think about the girls who are exhibiting mean behaviors, there's something going on there too. They need help and support and they need to feel loved. And they don't just need someone to say, okay, here's steps 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. We're going to fix all of this. That it just doesn't help them. And as adults, we can't fix all this girl drama. There's a lot of dynamics going on a daily basis. There is no way to get rid of it, but we can perhaps minimize it by supporting each of the girls, not talking badly about any of the girls, and just being there for them.
I think as an adult, we have needs. And I think we fail to realize that teens have the same needs. We want to all be heard. We want to all be validated. We want to all be loved. And age doesn't differentiate that. It doesn't discriminate. Everybody wants that level of acceptance. I was going to use that as my closer, but I'm very curious about how you, why did I just lose my train of thought, you guys? This is why I should learn to edit, because I would have totally stopped right now.
No, that's okay.
I had the thought. Why did it leave me? I don't know. I guess we will just end it with that, you guys. Sherry, I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing this with us, being a seed planted in the life of teens, because I guarantee that is making an impact and changing the trajectory of us as a whole, bringing in that awareness as kids. And listen, bitch, dream big. Life is too short to play small. Embrace who God called you to be. Own your shit and be brave as you step into your full potential as a co-creator. Until next time, love yourself in the moment. even if you're flawed, you are still fantastic. You are beautiful. This is Brandon Lynette reminding you of your potential with a side of chaos. You're in the arena. Keep swinging. Thanks again, Sherry, so much for coming by today.
Thank you.